Thank you for standing by. This is the conference operator. Welcome to the Aurania Resources conference call and audio-only webcast. As a reminder, all participants are in listen-only mode, and the conference is being recorded. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. To join the question queue, you may press star, then one on your telephone keypad. Should you need assistance during the conference call, you may signal an operator by pressing star and zero. I would now like to turn the conference over to Dr. Keith Barron, Chairman and CEO. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much. Hello out there, and welcome to the conference call for Aurania Resources. The reason we decided to have this call today was to put our press release from yesterday in a bit of context. Now, we talked about the geologists in the field have come across what we believe to be an old Spanish road, so it would be potentially 400 years old. And we think this may have linked the two lost gold settlements of Logroño de los Caballeros and Sevilla de Oro. It seems to be in the right, going in the right direction. It's more or less north-south. And description of this road, it's certainly not like the 401 in Toronto or anything like that. This is just basically a track through the jungle, but it is very significant because as you walk through the jungle, it is very, very thick vegetation, a lot of hanging vines, a lot of trees. You have to cut your way with a machete, and you really go really just step by step, meter by meter, and then suddenly in the middle of nowhere, it clears out in a linear direction both ways. So you can actually, for the very first time in the jungle, actually see your way ahead quite a distance in one direction about a kilometer and another direction about 2 kilometers. You can walk this thing out, and at both ends, it's cut by landslides. So what it essentially is, if you can think about it, remember that these two places were in production on a, we understand from the historical record, for about 30 years or so. And so you can think of people walking back and forth over this thing, donkeys, horses, maybe even some wagons at some point, or things being dragged. You know, if you go to an area like where I live in Switzerland, that's fairly mountainous, and you see that every so often you get complaints from environmentalists about mountain bikes. And mountain bikes leaving scars on the landscape, because what happens after a few seasons, the rainwater from the melt in the spring starts to move the topsoil, and after a couple of years, you've got nothing but bare rock. And that's the situation that we saw in the jungle, and I was actually physically on the road last week. So this is an area where there's just basically lots and lots of rock at the surface. It's flat. There is very little to no vegetation. There's nowhere for the trees to get a toehold because there's no topsoil. And so it's of interest to us because it's exactly the right place where we thought it would be. Another thing I want to put in the context, which I think people are getting confused about, you know, in the historical records, they call these things ciudades or cities, but they never were cities. They were gold settlements, probably of a maximum 20 to 30 Spaniards living behind a wooden palisade, and then a number of indigenous people who were made to work in the mines. And we're talking at the very inception when these things were discovered, around 2,000 workers. But over time, and over actually rather brief time, that dwindled down into the hundreds. And it's very, very sad story what happened, and it is documented in the historical record that these these poor people were victims of disease. In fact, the anthropologists say that the areas were depopulated as much as 92%, and that would have been through importation of diseases like influenza and smallpox, and certainly the indigenous people didn't have any immunity against these things. So, and that's eventually what proved to be the demise of both places. We know that from the archives that there were a request to the Spanish crown to purchase African slaves and send them from West Africa over to Ecuador to work in the mines. But by the time this happened, it was really a bit too late because the Spanish crown was bankrupt. This is after the Spanish Armada had been lost and everything. And so it never happened, and these places were reclaimed by the jungle and lost. So we're attempting to find them. As you did see in the press release, we talked about a LIDAR survey. I would like to see the LIDAR survey zeroing in on both ends of the road and trying to pick up vestiges of the mining activity. We are not going to find any buildings. We are not going to find anything of archaeological significance. What it will be is a trench, a pit, a rock dump, something like that. But we're not going to be finding any heaps of gold and silver or anything like that. Richard, maybe I'll hand it over to you for comments.
I think that's exactly the takeaway. I mean, we've got about a 2.5 kilometer section of the road, and as Keith mentioned, it's exactly where we sort of expected it to be. And you know, the next steps are to try and see the extensions of it in the LIDAR survey, and obviously we've been in contact with the guys at Metron who are doing this compilation of all of our different types of data, and you know, they will be, this is right in their wheelhouse of getting a section of a sort of track. And then, you know, they use their math algorithms to work out where the targets are at either end of that. So the Metron guys have been given a heads up that this data is coming, and they're thinking about how to handle it and how to tie it in with all the rest of the data sets that they're dealing with. So we're heading into quite an exciting time.
I would certainly agree.
So just moving on from that, and I'm sure that we'll have a couple of questions on the road at the end of the call. But just in terms of a bit of a general update, the drilling, we've just finished the second hole at Yawi, and the drill is moving today to the second target. We've changed the approach a little bit at Yawi. We originally said we would probably drill 3 or 4 holes per platform, and there are 4 targets at Yawi. From what we've seen on the first 2 holes, we've changed the concept a little bit. We think that we're dealing with a reasonably big target area, and I think the what we plan to do is drill 1 to 2 holes from each of the on each of the 4 target areas, and in fact there's a 5th target area that's being sort of defined at the moment. And once we've got a picture of the sort of bigger part of the system, then we'll decide where we're going to start homing in. And I think the best way to sort of visualize this is, you know, some of our videos that Keith shot in the Yellowstone National Park show those massive areas of steaming ground and the geysers coming out of these sort of silica terraces. And those things can be huge. And that's exactly what we're dealing with at Yowie. In fact, the bigger the area that the sinter covers, the more one has to ensure that you're not focusing on one little part of it and you miss the context of the rest of it. So our drilling is going to be moving towards getting that bigger context, which hopefully will define where the target area is. Furthermore, we're getting one of the best epithermal consultants onto the property at the beginning of December. Jeff Hedenquist from Ottawa is one of the world's best epithermal geologists, and Jeff saved a project that I worked on with IAMGOLD, and we ended up, thanks to his input, making a discovery. So it'll be good to be working with Jeff again. That's the first week of December. He'll be reviewing everything that we've done and the way we're targeting and all the rest of it. On the copper side, just to reiterate, the copper is on surface. It's something that we are stumbling across, whether we like it or not. In our gold exploration, we are just coming across the copper because this area has never been explored before. And, we feel that the copper targets are very significant. We're seeing two types of copper. The one is the sort of porphyry-related copper, where the copper is in a sort of granitic plug, like many of the Chilean deposits. And so we're seeing very strong evidence of that, and there will be some news flow on that going forward. And then we're seeing this sedimentary copper as well, where the copper is within specific sedimentary horizons. And we're excited about that because it's so much cheaper to extract that kind of copper than it is any other kind of copper, including porphyry copper. We've got a couple of videos in the cutting room at the moment that'll illustrate those kinds of targets and the ease with which the copper can get extracted. And what we are seeing is a sort of clustering of the porphyry copper targets together with the sedimentary copper. And we're working on both targets at the moment in the field. It's relatively inexpensive work. And once we have that sort of relationship between the sedimentary copper and the porphyry copper outlined, we'll then bring in a drill rig and start putting a couple of holes into those. When we've got the two kinds of copper deposits defined, that's the most efficient and cost-effective way of dealing with the copper. In terms of joint ventures, there is interest in joint ventures. We have a data room open, and obviously we're under confidentiality with the companies that are looking at the data room, so we can't say who's in there and how many companies are in there. Suffice to say that there is interest in joint ventures, and I think that ideally we would like to have a couple of joint ventures. Most of the majors that are in Ecuador are very much copper orientated, and so their focus is largely on the copper at this stage. Keith, I don't know if you want to add anything to that. Just that the drilling on the copper targets will probably start early next year, And just to repeat, we will be plugging a couple of holes into the porphyry-type targets and the sedimentary copper targets around them. Keith, anything that you want to add?
Well, yeah, you said that we stumbled over the copper and sediments, and I want to stress it's copper and silver in sediments when we were looking for gold. But, you know, I look at this maybe a little bit differently. I think it's like God kissed us on the forehead. It's an incredible thing that we've come across because we've traced it for 22 kilometers. And we've had the geologist close sampling and mapping it now, and they've traced it on almost a meter-by-meter basis for 2.5 kilometers. So they're busy in there with the rock saws, and they've been sawing the outcrops that are visible in the little stream cuts and trying to get a sense of what's going on here. But this thing is really quite incredible. Remember, this is oxide copper. This is not sulfide. It doesn't require a mill to grind it into a paste and then flotation cells and to produce a concentrate that would have to be shipped overseas to a smelter. This is something, because it's in sediments, it's got what would be called a low work index. It would be easy to crush it. Coarsely crush it, and it could be potentially heap leached. Maybe we're getting a bit ahead of ourselves, but certainly that's the way these sorts of deposits would be tackled. So what our job is to kind of get our arms around this thing as soon as possible and assess a potential value to it, or at least an order of magnitude what we think it could be worth. Of course, we have to see what the third dimension is doing. But the thing that's very, very interesting here, and it has not been seen anywhere else in the world, is that we have both porphyry copper and sedimentary copper in the same place. In fact, we've got sedimentary copper overlying some of the porphyry copper targets. But to date, we've ground truthed six of these things, the porphyries, and we're finding QSP, massive pyrite mineralization at the surface, and we've been able to do soil sampling, as we've said in our in one of our press releases, over top of one of these things, and got some very significant copper values. So the things are real; they're real targets. Porphyry copper targets. You know, porphyry copper sometimes can sustain production for 25, 30 years, even more. Sedimentary copper, nothing has been seen on this scale really for a very, very long time, and I'm talking about many, many decades. So fingers crossed, and we'll see what it looks like in the third dimension when we drill it. There'll be shallow holes, they'll be quickly drilled, and I expect we'll get some very, very interesting information coming early next year. Regarding joint ventures, I would be not considering the shareholders properly if we didn't talk to the majors when they come and approach us. We do have some confidentiality agreements out there right now, and we do have a data room, but this company is not in a rush to do joint ventures. We need to establish values. I don't want to get in any sort of deal that might be egregious for the shareholders. We need to assess the value of these things before we go ahead and make deals on these things. But at some point, of course, we want to be hopefully spending somebody else's money to further these things down the road. And we have a boatload of targets. I'm sure all the people on the call are aware. And it's really overwhelming for a little junior company like ours. So we will have to do something at some point, but we won't be doing that in the very, very near term.
So just in summary, before we open it up for questions, and obviously we look forward to trying to answer those questions, we've got the drill turning on the gold targets at Yawi. The discovery of this potentially Spanish road is a huge leg up in our quest to find the old gold deposits of Logroño and Sevilla. And as Keith mentioned, potentially the copper has enormous value, and it's something that we can see and that we can trace out. So we're firing on all cylinders. Aurel, do you want to open it up for questions?
Certainly. We will now begin the question and answer session. To join the question queue, you may press star, then one on your telephone keypad. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing any keys. To withdraw your question, please press star, then two. Once again, to join the question queue, please press star, then one now. Our first question comes from Mark Reichman of Noble Capital Markets.
Good morning. First, just kind of a high-level question. As an early mover, Aurania secured a large promising land package in a country that, you know, continues to attract investment from large mining companies. I was wondering if Keith could discuss the government's efforts to encourage growth in the mining sector, you know, this influx of majors and what it means for Aurania in terms of putting a value on your concessions. And then again, I think you've pretty much touched on the potential for joint venture opportunities.
Yeah, certainly, and thanks for the question. Those folks who have seen our videos have seen that recently we had a visit by a senior Fernando Benalcazar, who's the Vice Minister of Mines, to our project, and he actually met with the indigenous people living in one of the villages in our project area and answered questions. The government has been very, very supportive of what we're doing. We've got our drill permits for Yawi, and you know, there have been other folks in Ecuador who had trouble getting their permits, but we seem to have not. You know, and maybe that's because we're doing things right with the communities, and we've not had any complaints against us or any skirmishes or anything like that. We're trying to do things obviously the right way. Now, regarding the you know, I've just been I'm here in London, and I've been at a conference for the last couple of days, and I've had the question of political risk come up. You may have seen in the headlines a couple of days ago, BHP has made another major investment in one of our competitors in Ecuador, to the tune of $22 million. And so
yes.
Certainly they've got a comfort level with investing, and they are a major international company. Just in this last 10 days, I was very fortunate to be invited by Lundin Gold for the opening of Fruta del Norte, which was the mine that my group discovered back in 2006 with Aurelian. And it was a fantastic event. There were, I think, about 600 people there. Very, very gratifying to see something finally come to fruition. And just last weekend, they poured their first gold. They poured a doré bar of approximately 10 kilos. And so I suspect that's just going to be one of many, many bars that are going to be poured here in the near future and in the coming. Well, they're talking about 15 years of production, and congratulations to them. They've managed to get the mine up and running in record time in 5 years. Fantastic effort by everyone. But part of that effort came to fruition because they were supported very, very well by the government of Ecuador. And this is going to be a very, very significant thing for the GDP of the country. And also for the local people, they're going to get 3% of the royalty that comes off the deposit. So it's a win-win for them as well. And I think it's a real game changer. Now we have two major mining projects, the other one being Mirador, which is a copper gold porphyry, which reached production with the Chinese in July of this year. So there's two of them now that are going, and I think this is just the thin edge of the wedge. There's in another 5-6 years, there could be double that number, and certainly the government is aware of our efforts and aware that we have many targets, and they are hoping that some of these targets are going to result in mines.
And then just one other question, and I'll get back in the queue. Keith, would you characterize this discovery of this historic infrastructure, would you characterize that as maybe a pivotal point in your search, and how do you expect it to accelerate efforts to locate Sevilla and Logrono using your multi-pronged approach? I mean, is it more beneficial with the LIDAR surveys? Or, does this provide a lot of clues in terms of Metron's using their approach?
Well, I think it helps both, but the LIDAR thing is something that can really, really leapfrog things ahead. And, you know, now that we've found this potential Spanish road, we've got focus points. Essentially, you go to one end of the road and you go to the other end of the road and look for the extensions. And hopefully one of them is going to one end is going to terminate in the old mine workings. So I think this is a very significant discovery. I'm, you know, fingers crossed that it's going to be something that will result in real significance. We know from the documentation that we have, and it's we're talking about hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of historic documents and contemporary maps. This is not a tale out of Treasure Island. This is something that's very real. People lived and died there, and lots and lots of gold was produced. So. They're still back in the forest somewhere to be found, and now we're very, very much hot on the trail.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Mark Fields, a private investor.
Well, thanks for the review, Keith and Richard. Being very interested in following this project through the historical context you provided, and also, of course, the all the different styles of mineralization you found. I have two questions, really. One is with respect to the LIDAR survey. You hope to see, I guess, some old mine workings you indicated. Is a jungle canopy, is that going to cause any issues there? Or do you hope to be able to see some things through the LIDAR survey that will lead you to the old mine workings? And second of all, with respect to the stream sediment data you've collected, are you going to be able to integrate that, and is that going to be helpful with respect to this road and trying to trace down those old mine workings and hopefully the mine as well?
Mark, thanks very much. Absolutely. The LIDAR, we've had quite a few technical issues with it, and that relates to getting through the jungle canopy. We've selected a very sophisticated system exactly to deal with the jungle canopy, and so we should be able to get through it and see pretty detailed stuff. We're not only looking for the old mine workings, but potentially we would be able to see the actual veins that they were working. And also for the sedimentary copper, it's crucially important because it'll help us be able to trace those particular sedimentary layers out along the jungle floor. So there are a couple of different components that the LIDAR survey deals with. In terms of the stream sediments, absolutely. I think that they will pick up the old workings in because the you know the mine dumps would have been shedding gold and silver into the streams.
Good. Thanks very much, and good luck on your progress.
Thanks very much. Thanks, Mark.
Our next question comes from James Bryson, a private investor.
Hello, just a quick question, and prefaced by just saying I don't need many questions because you've done such a phenomenally good job of communicating with shareholders, and it's greatly appreciated. What I was wondering about is the Yawi turnaround times for assays and whether you will batch them and not do like one hole at a time.
James,
I'll let you address that, Richard. Yeah.
Okay. James, first of all, thank you very much. We appreciate the feedback, absolutely. James, there's no doubt that we will batch the results. You know, particularly at Yawi, we're getting the feel that we're dealing with a big mineralized system, when I say big, an extensive mineralized system. So it makes absolutely no sense to put out results from one hole at a time. We have to be able to sort of understand the context. And, you know, remember that, you know, in Keith's discovery of Fruta del Norte, I think it was hole number 51 or 52 that actually made the discovery. So, you know, with these gold systems, one's got to be a little bit patient. And, you know, they are not a slam dunk. It's a matter of putting together the various puzzle pieces to work out where the core of the system is.
Excellent. That sounds wonderful. I think the batching is going to be great. I must say, though, from that little picture of the core, it certainly looks like beautiful epithermal system.
There are beautiful textures. However, I must just caution you that those were vein lits as opposed to great big veins. So, you know, that's why I refer back to the puzzle pieces and saying, you know, we've got to, you know, the drilling gives you those different puzzle pieces, and then one's got to find the best fit for them. So, it's exciting stuff. Yeah.
It is indeed. Thank you so much.
I might just add, we certainly are on a big extinct geothermal field. And the dimensions of this thing are really quite huge. You know, we've identified Yawi number 5 and Yawi number 6 in this area, and we have the high geochemical results for the Pathfinder elements in there as well. So it's going to take some time. Fruta del Norte was maybe the 10th or 12th prospect we had drilled starting from 2001 right up until 2006 when the discovery was made. Of course, we're better funded than that company was back then. Nevertheless, you know, if it was easy to find gold, it wouldn't be precious. So it is going to take some time, and people are going to have some patience.
I'll be patient. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Our next question is a follow-up from Mark Reichman of Noble Capital Markets.
Yes, I just wanted to ask if you've given some consideration to your exploration expenditure and financing plans in 2020, and you know, how your exploration expenditures get allocated.
I can handle that, or at least the first part. You know, we have, as I said, we have a boatload of targets here. A huge number of targets, and well beyond what a typical junior mining company would have. Of course, we can't do all things at once, and we can only deploy so much money into the field in a competent way, and then it gets silly. So we're looking at a budget altogether next year of about 10 million US. I think that is going to very, very much move the different projects, the different sites along, and significantly add value to what we're doing. But remember, we've only explored 55 to 60% of our area. We still have a lot of things to cover, and Lord only knows what we're going to uncover given what we've already found. We've already found what I think would be considered to be more than an adequate serving of targets. But what we really need to do now is to prioritize these things and select the best ones and get really the best bang for our buck. Richard?
Keith, absolutely. And I think that in terms of allocation of the money that's actually going into the ground, the majority will continue to go into the gold targets. We are a gold company. So I would say that our current budgeting is that at least 60% will go into follow-up of the gold targets, the majority of that into drilling. And the concept is still to just keep on with this man-portable rig and just move from one target to the next. We already, after Yowie, we already know which target is going to be drilled after that. All the water permits are in, and we're setting up for that. On the copper, the majors that are in Ecuador that are writing these big checks for good projects, they are all copper-orientated companies. Copper is the electric metal. As Keith said, we've been given this incredible opportunity of finding copper, finding it at surface, and finding copper that's easy and cheap to process. So, we have to advance that stuff, those targets, to create value for the shareholders, to bring the joint venture partners in. And just to reiterate that the major companies, the major copper companies that have signed joint ventures in Ecuador typically will sign for many tens of millions of dollars, in the range of sort of 50 to 60 million per target or per group of concessions. And then the original company, Orania in our case, would generally keep a 30% sort of free carried interest right up to the definition of a feasibility study. So, when Keith referred to spending other people's money, that's what he was referring to. So, our shareholders are still exposed to those big discoveries, and these major companies, they know what they're doing. They've got expertise, they've got money, they can do things quicker than we can because they can afford helicopters and that kind of thing. So we really do look forward to advancing the copper targets to the point where the majors are going to be really excited and come in and put in the horsepower behind them that they really need.
Mm-hmm. And I might just add, from my personal history with Aurelian, in the course of our exploration, Fruta del Norte was only one of 34 gold occurrences that we found, 34 of them, and 12 porphyry coppers. We didn't find any sedimentary copper on that property, but we found 12 porphyry copper targets. We drilled two of the porphyry copper targets in a very preliminary way. We really didn't get the job finished, but we were scooped up by Kinross, and Kinross got that whole package really, and they only paid value for Fruta del Norte, and everything else came for free. Now the project is in the hands of Lundin Gold, and Lundin Gold has joint ventured with Newcrest on the peripheral concessions that contain some of these gold targets and porphyry copper targets. And I know because I've been told that they're close to drilling one of the porphyry copper targets that that we never got a chance to explore. So, you know, I think it's doing a real disservice to the shareholders if we just kind of sit on our laurels here and concentrate on one commodity and give the rest to someone potentially down the road for free. I'm not going to let that happen.
Well, thank you very much, and also thank you for this call.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for the question.
Our next question comes from Michael Barrow, a private investor.
Hello, good morning. That's exciting news about the road discovery. I'm wondering if the area where the road's been discovered and the possible terminations are part of a piece of ground where we have a deal with the locals. I know we do in a lot of it, but not maybe not all. And the other question is, do you think there's a chance of repeating some of the things that happened when the last mine was discovered? I know it was kind of not so pleasant, and I wonder if you just could address that. Thank you.
Which mine are you referring to?
The one where the boys were hunting pigs and the whole sort of, you know.
Gosh. Well, hey, you got to get that in context. That was in 1981 before they had a national mining law. So there was an invasion of 25,000 miners there, but, you know, that was just a free-for-all. And that cannot happen today. There is no way it can happen, and it will not happen. You know, this is an area that does have indigenous people there. It is an area where we have permission right now to be. We have had many discussions with the local community, so they're very, very much aware. And of course, we have a lot of indigenous people from the local community working alongside of us, so it's fully transparent what we're doing. You know, these sorts of people, they're not too fond of having invaders come in and starting to tear up the place and pollute it with mercury and all the rest of it. And that's just not going to happen.
Good.
And Michael, just to go on from that, I mean, the whole political environment has changed. You know, what happened at Dumbika is a national embarrassment. And not only did the government go without getting any revenue from a huge amount of gold that was mined there, but, you know, it's completely contaminated and it's a mess. In our area, you know, we work, as Keith says, very closely with the indigenous communities there. In terms of who gets in, and you know, our press releases will always be a little bit vague as to where these locations are, for good reason, and we can count on the government. The government, for the first time certainly in modern history, went in with the army supporting the police in an area of northern Ecuador about 6 months ago to clean up an invasion of informal miners on another company's concession. The government is all over this. They absolutely do not want a repeat of a sort of Nambika situation, and obviously it's within our interest to make damn sure that the same thing doesn't happen in our area. We have that obligation to the government and to the communities that we're working with.
That's great. Thank you very much.
This concludes the question and answer session. I would like to turn the conference back over to Dr. Richard Spencer for any closing remarks.
Well, first of all, guys, thanks everyone, and to the people in the U.S. for giving up on their turkey preparation to listen in. Thank you very much for your support as shareholders for the questions. They've been good and challenging as always to answer. And you know, as I mentioned earlier, we're firing on all cylinders. Two prongs going on the gold side, on the historic side, and on the drilling, and also the copper shaping up to be a value driver in the short term in the background. Thank you very much for your support and for your time today.
Thank you, and happy Thanksgiving, and God bless.
This concludes today's conference call. You may disconnect your lines. Thank you for participating, and have a pleasant day.